It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Trying to get that thumbnail. You stole it this week, I saw.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you got it this week, so
oh. I'm
trying to do something. We'll see. I don't know the system. I thought I had it worked out, and I don't, so we'll see. So we've established Superman more like super meh. You don't care that much about that. How are you feeling? There's a surprising number of Frankenstein movies coming up.
Hadn't heard that.
How are you feeling about those? Well, apparently Guillermo del Toro's is finally happening.
Oh, didn't know.
And Maggie Gyllenhaal is directing The Bride, which has Christian Bale as Frankenstein's monster.
Hadn't heard that.
Are you really that into Frankenstein? Sometimes I wonder. Is it because he's not a DC hero? So you're not. No, but I was, because I know you appreciate, like, you appreciate the James Whale movies.
I do.
And presumably other versions.
I do, sure.
Or do you know of any versions you haven't seen?
Probably. Because not up to my
I
head.
Wondered, the Victor Frankenstein, the James McAvoy, Daniel Radcliffe one. Have you ever seen that one?
Yes.
I saw it. I think I saw it on a plane. I mean, it's fine. It's an action movie. Like, did you see Van Helsing? It's kind of like that, but less violent.
Yep.
But what I wonder, because there is one important thing from the source material that literally no version gets right, and that's the dead body thing.
In my view, yes.
Yeah. Well, because I still haven't read the source material, but you've said it's very explicitly
very explicitly
created from substances that are not explicit, and at no point there's no grave robbing or cadavers mentioned.
No, there is some experimentation done on both animal and human remains. But it's not said that that's what the creature is made out of. And it's heavily implied that the creature is not made out of that, because how would that even work? The creature's 8 feet tall, right? You're not stitching together normal human parts. It's not said that that happened. In fact, what I think it says pretty clearly, and there are other people who agree with me, but there are people who disagree, is that Victor used some mysterious alchemical process. Almost like the creature is a homunculus, but giant, almost like that. But the reason some people disagree with me and others is because there is mention of experiments being done on animal and cadavers and things like that. Not in association with building the creature, but in association with trying to understand what the origins of life is. And galvanism is also mentioned, but I think I read somewhere that that was in a later edition, but that wasn't even in the original.
Yeah, because she hadn't even been in Wonder Woman by the time that came out.
I do want to make clear there are people who disagree, but I feel like they disagree on some fairly flimsy evidence as far as
I always try and obfuscate the fact that there are people who disagree with me. Not that it comes up hardly ever. So how do you like, is this a struggle for you that one of, at least to you, the central conceits of the original work is just blatantly disregarded? Like, as a convention. Like, you will never see a Frankenstein movie where they're not stitched together out of dead bodies, or maybe just sometimes it's one body. Sometimes you're just bringing back a dead body, I'll admit, but it's still dead body. So like, does that bother you? Does that annoy you? Because that, you'll never see that version.
Right. Well,
because nobody's going to make it.
Okay. So first of all, I do like the movies, and I think of these things as being based on the movies, not based on Mary Shelley's thing.
I think that's where we've come from, is maybe an early movie was based on the material, but then it became so iconic. Although, to be fair, we didn't get Igor until a few movies in, because we had Fritz. The original Igor was named Fritz.
Yeah.
In James Bale's versions, he's in
the
movie. Fritz.
There is no Igor in, of course, Mary Shelley's thing. Although
we've disregarded that. Nobody even knows that exists anymore.
Nathaniel Hawthorne tells a story of a person who is a scientist who works in a lab and who's doing crazy things, and he has an assistant who has a deformity. So
Victoria Funkenstein, the famous Nathaniel Hawthorne original material.
I'm saying he originated that idea, is all I'm saying. But so I do like the movies.
Wait,
and I can...
Is Victoria Funkenstein going to be the title of the episode? Because it feels like a real good start.
Apparently. I do like the movies, and I see these things as riffing on the movies, and I can like them for that without any problem at all.
Okay.
But to me, so it's like, well, you're never going to see a version where it's not that way. Well, but really, anytime I see a movie that's about artificial intelligence or creating a robot or whatever, that is that story. It's just an updated version of it. And that scratches that itch for me just fine. I mean, it would be cool to see a Frankenstein movie that's like set in that actual era that I think is truer to the book. I would love that, but it's not, I feel like those stories are being told, and I like those stories being told and how they're told. So I don't really feel like I'm missing out on anything.
I hate this about you.
What?
You can find the thing in a movie or TV show that you like, and the rest of the entire production can be like them calling you out and insulting you and like pulling people you love on the screen and threatening to murder them, and you're still going to be like, I really loved it for the characterization of blah blah blah. And I'll tell you, I'm like, they did take your family hostage, and you're like, yeah, and that part sucked, but it was short, and they didn't actually kill him, so the rest of it was good. I hate that you can do that, because I'm the opposite. It can be a perfect film, and this one dude should have been wearing spats to accurately portray that image, and it ruined the movie for me. Like, I don't know how you do it, and I hate you. Make no mistake, I hate you out of sheer envy. I hate you because I want this superpower. I don't want most of your superpowers. Most of your superpowers are about, oh, how can I stick out like a sore thumb and have people make terrible assumptions about me constantly because nobody really knows me deep down because I'm just a wounded little bird deep in my heart. None of that interests me. But if there's one thing I like in a movie or TV show, I can like that movie or TV show. Is it absolutely a power I need?
Well, I do think that there's a unique story being told by Mary Shelley that's not out there. And I think I find that unfortunate. I do find that unfortunate. However, I do.
Although I am at the point where I'm getting more and more in the camp of something awesome was made in a particular medium. We're done.
Right.
You don't need to make a movie of every book and a book of every TV show and a TV show of every web comic.
That's right. That's right.
And so sometimes I'm like that. I'm like, let's leave it there because you're going to mess it up.
Somehow. Right. So in a way,
maybe through no fault of your own, you're going to mess it up because it doesn't function within that space because it can't be done.
Right.
Like most Alan Moore graphic novels, they should never be filmed.
So in a way, her story's been protected by this, right? In a way, the films are running interference to make sure that when people read the story, now, of course, some people read the story and they read things into it based on this other material, at least in my observation. Well, why do you think that happened in the story? Show me the passage where that happened, and they can't do it. And they realize, oh, I just brought that to it myself based on other material. And that's unfortunate. But for the a lot of people will read Mary Shelley for the first time, being a fan of the movies and whatever, and they'll see something there that they didn't expect, and they'll be delighted by it, really, usually. And I find that very cool. And so, yes, in a way, her work has been protected by all of this stuff, because it's a very different story when you're resurrecting some. I mean, most of the Frankenstein stories are about, not all of them, but many of them are about this person remembering being alive and how complicated that is and stuff, but not all of them do that. In fact, I don't think the original film or film series even does that, because even in the second one where Frankenstein's learned to talk and stuff, I don't recall him talking about his previous life or anything like that.
I don't know. I still haven't seen the James Whale films.
I'm impressed by them for what they could do narratively.
I've heard they're amazing, and they're getting a critical reevaluation that seems to be making them even better.
Yeah,
in people's eyes.
You know, so, I don't fault them at all. I mean, for
there's anything. A whole slew of the real old ones that I need to do, and a bunch recently showed up on Shudder. The original Nosferatu, of the very old Universal monsters like the 30s James Whale ones, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, the original Phantom of the Opera.
So good, so good.
But these are the kind of things that are like, I'll enjoy it when I do it, but it takes so much effort for me to be like, I'm gonna watch this piece of 1930s German impressionism. So,
yeah. It doesn't keep me up at night at all. And like you said, I think I kind of sometimes appreciate how it gets to stay what it is, because if someone did do it right, quote unquote, maybe I'd like that worse. But again, it to me, it's, you're creating some a human from scratch, and there's lots of stories like that, and they're very good stories, even though, you know, they're robots or whatever, but I like robots too, so it all works. I'm cool.
Well, I'm glad you're sleeping. I toss and turn thinking about how you're never going to get the Frankenstein movie you really want, but guess now that I know you're not suffering, I feel better. Hello, everyone. I'm so tired worrying about William's Frankenstein. Welcome to the Magical Talking Podcast, the only podcast in the world that really loves you guys. And you know how you know? Because there is nothing riding on this. The algorithm has not spotted our existence. We have, if I'm being really hubristic, 12 listeners. /viewers. I have made so negative amounts of money on this podcast. We get nothing out of it except you all, so we must really love you all, and we do. I don't know that we know each individual listener, because some of you are pretty good at lurking, but we know a lot of you. Some of you we might know, and you don't know that we know. But we know you're out there, so we love you. All the other podcasts are lying, so you'll buy their merch. We can't even be bothered to edit. Merch is not... One day I almost wrote the Magical Talking Hat podcast on a piece of paper and thought I'd sell it, but I was too lazy to do that. So it's all for love. We love each and every one of you except Azure Talon. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 736.
And this in my elbow.
Do people use that term lurking still? I mean, for online.
I do.
Okay. I mean, that's been around since the beginning, by the way. Lurking is something they've called it since the late 80s, before, when only students were using the internet. They called it that when a person would log on to a system and read everything, but never say anything. I didn't know if that was still a word people used.
I use it. I'm people.
And specifically in that internet context, right? I mean, that's a word, lurks. People use that word.
I've never had anyone be confused when I used it, but I mostly hang out with old people who ignore me and young people who ignore me. So,
yeah.
If you're just joining us for the first time, we have a hat. It is magical. Doesn't talk. But it is of talking in that it has its own email address that people like to write into themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And then the people write whatever they want, comments, topics, questions, blah, press releases, maybe. The hat magically all on its own forwards us the emails, compels us magically to read them and talk about them till we're bored. And that's the show, except we don't get a lot of emails, so it's often just the end of the show. So, how's your week been, Mr. Man? That's what I call Addy.
Mr. Man, huh?
It's one of his many nicknames. And people think sometimes it comes from the Mr. Men, which is the old childhood book where you'd have like Mr. Strong and Miss Silly, and they were all children books. I think they're bigger in Britain, but no, it actually comes from Tiny Toon Adventures. And Elmira Fudd, the Cree summer voiced character from that, she would sometimes try and like get animals and like treat them as little pets or whatever. And when she would talk, she'd say, "Oh, are you Mr. Man? What are you doing?" And that's where it came from. So people get that straight. So how's your week been, Mr. Man?
So aside from work, we've been watching a series called Clarkson Farm.
You sent a link to that.
It's pretty good. It's interesting.
I personally know Jeremy Clarkson as one of the most successfully offensive celebrities in the UK. Who at one time was very into cars and racism, because he thought both were kind of funny. But I understand this is a show where he's running a farm. So how's that go?
Yeah, he's still into cars. I mean, he makes, you know, world tour and all that
is
stuff.
Is he still into racism?
That I don't know. He hasn't said.
Usually you can tell once he's said more than two or three sentences. But
after I sent you that link, I thought, I don't know anything about this guy's politics, so I may be just as offended Tony terribly.
You made the eyebrows raise.
Okay.
I don't give a shit who watches Clark. And I watch for a while. I was really into Top Gear.
You were. Okay.
For a while, he was showed up on QI, and it's not like I'm boycotting those episodes. He's just kind of an asshole. And that's the thing. He's racist, not in a like, oh, I hate those people and I want. No, he's racist in that I think it's funny to make fun of the voices and cultures and customs of other people.
Of other people.
All the time. And it's hilarious.
He doesn't.
And also, if I get mad, I will punch people that I work with.
Oh, well, okay. Okay, so neither one of those things shows up in this show that I know of.
I wouldn't think so. The fact, how old is this show? Because he basically became persona non grata for all British television like four different times in his career. And I don't know if anybody would give him a show now.
Yeah.
Is this current?
Yeah, there's three seasons. And it started just before the pandemic. In fact, the onset of the pandemic is part of one of the seasons, I think season one. But there's no evidence of racism or violence toward his compatriots in this. However, he is the kind of person and fitting in with what you're saying. I think more fundamental than both of those things, I think what maybe causes both of the things you've observed is he's very thoughtless about other people and even his future self. Like, he'll do things that if he thought for 2 seconds, he could have saved himself a lot of trouble down the road. Mm-hmm. And as he's working on this farm and he's doing farm things, he often has ideas that end up being really stupid, end up getting in his way, end up getting in other people's way. He gets in trouble with the local council sometimes, which half the time is the same kind of regulatory stuff that any farmer is going to run into. But the other half of the time, it's like, you could have been more respectful, not just of them and their authority. I mean, the heck with that, if you feel like it, but to other farmers, right? And to people who live in town, like ordinary people, you could have been more respectful to them and you wouldn't even be in this thing. So yes.
This all tracks.
Yeah, that does happen. But it's interesting to see.
But what's the one thing? What's the one thing that you got so you can watch the show? There's one thing.
Well, it's farming. And
God damn it.
He's working with a whole bunch of people who are really cool. And
too bad for them.
It is nice to see him when these things blow up in his face. Show some kind of
and to be fair, in later career, part of the appeal of him was watching it all go to shit.
And clearly feeling bad about it, apologizing to other people, giving credit to others when there's a success because he knows he didn't have anything to do with it. I mean, it's kind of nice to see him do that. I mean, he's my least favorite personality in the whole thing, but like everyone else is so fun to watch, and the whole thing about running a farm and all the stuff he's doing. It's fun to watch all of that.
That's cool. What service is it on?
Prime. We're watching it on Prime. Yeah. Not what I wanted to talk about though, because something I didn't watch this week, but a previous week that I didn't bring up is Adolescence. I watched Adolescence. Have you heard of it?
No. I mean, I've heard of the time period. I remember it.
No, there's fondly. A show. There's a show. Okay. Called, it's a series, limited series. In fact, it's only four episodes, called Adolescence. And it's been in the news. That's how I heard of it. And that's why I wanted to watch it, because I don't think you would like it. So I'm not bringing it up to correct, amend it to you. It's just,
listen, you tell everybody else.
Well, I'm not going to talk about anything that happens in it that's like disturbing or anything.
What? I can't hear you.
I don't even remember I don't even remember which service it's on. Netflix. Okay. So this is a Netflix thing. I mean, it was probably, if you've been watching Netflix in the last several weeks, it's probably shown up as a, you know, number six in the,
what is it?
It's a four episode limited series about a 13 year old boy who murders a girl. I think a 13-year-old girl, and it's the story of him being arrested. I think that's how it starts. He's arrested, and then evidence, you know, the parents see the like CCTV evidence, and you just see the process of this kid going through the legal part of the legal process of eventually pleading guilty because he, you know, he's going to admit that he killed this girl. And there's also the backstory to him being motivated as a 13-year-old boy to do this is he was online and, you know, he became familiar with
connected with Jeremy Clarkson in a chat room.
No, like Andrew Tate and things like that. The incel community. I mean, that's actually brought up, the term incel, and that he thinks he's an incel and whatever, 13-year-old boy. And that's really just what it's about. But the reason it's gotten so much press is because, like, in I think in the UK there are certain people who are like wanting it to be shown in schools as an instructional warning, right, to young people about interacting with the internet and being corrupted and radicalized by the internet. And so there's a big debate about it, whether or not that's appropriate, whether or not that should be done, whether or not it really teaches anything, whether or not it even addresses those things. So I watched it. And the one thing nobody ever says, which I don't know why, is all four episodes are one shot. That's the gimmick of the show to me, is that every single episode, they're hour or sometimes more than an hour long, one shot.
Have you looked it up? Are they actual oneers or is it like trick oneers?
I haven't looked it up.
Probably trick. It's real rare to do a real one, and sort of no point with modern technology.
Well, right, exactly. And you can tell sometimes where it's like they did it there. They had
to. But only if you're really looking, and they're usually smart enough to do it in like, here's a shot of a tree. Like,
right.
It's not like in the middle of an actual.
No, it's really well done. It and also, there are some times where it's not really working. The whole one shot's not really working, but it's just in the show. You just can watch it. You can decide for yourself if that.
It seems okay. A little hat on a hat. I mean, I know we're in a place where there are a lot of movies and TV shows about this, and there need to be, because this is a real issue. I think it started with We Have to Talk About Kevin, which was a sort of a famous book that became a famous movie of two grown-ups talking about their child, and we eventually find out the child was a school shooter. There's another one from a few years ago. I want to just say it's called The Meeting. It's something like that, but it's four parents. The school brought them together to have a conversation. It's very tense, and you eventually figure out one of them are the parents of the school shooter and one of them are the parents of one of the victims. Oh. And for some reason they're together. There's just a lot of these, and they are very important, and they need to deal with stuff. I obviously will never see them. I have no need to see them. But I think it is important that it's being talked about. It seems real. It still seems enough of a new phenomenon and an important one to just work on the content. Having a filmmaking gimmick feels like too much. Well, like, don't add that in.
I guess, but nobody's talking about it. But I would also say,
which means it didn't properly distract, which I guess is good. Yeah. But maybe just not have done it.
Yeah, I suppose. But also, I would say that had I watched this before, people were talking about it like this. I'm not sure I would have thought that the online radicalization angle was like that big a part of it. I mean, it's there. Yeah. It's definitely there, but it's so when I hear someone saying, well, we need to show this in schools so kids, you know, learn the lessons of this, I don't know how that's going to happen when it's, to me, that was a plot point, not.
Which is too bad, because that is such a focus. I remember Niblings go, like, one of my male, masculine presenting Niblings at like age 8 saw a thing on TikTok and was going around talking about how women keep falsely accusing men of sexual assault. And we were all just like, okay, but unfortunately they're like 8, so they're like, I don't remember, I just saw a TikTok about it, so we can't even go to but we're just like, that's not no. But also we didn't want to like push, so like then they die, because that's, as I've talked about many times, when you find these groups that are like really prejudiced against some other demographic, a lot of the members, you find out they didn't have any prejudice against those people. These were the people who made friends with them, and that was their beliefs, so they adopted them.
Right.
And so, way too easy to do. So yeah, I would think that would be a more interesting focus for such a material as this.
Well, right. So as I watched it, again, to me, if you were to show this in the classes, I think, to me, the message that kids would most likely get would be this 13-year-old boy was disturbed somehow, like before getting online. And how did that happen? I mean, you spend a lot of time with the parents, and it doesn't seem like they're abusive or anything like that. And there's, you know, there's other kids. I mean, I feel like the story says that this kid had an interaction with the internet that went bad, it happened to this kid, right? Like it's not a big social phenomena. This kid had this problem because this kid came to it with some kind of disturbance, which we never find out what that is. So I'm not sure.
To be fair, as far as we know, none of the people creating this created this with the intent of showing it in schools. That's just something.
Yeah, exactly. That's another thing.
People over there. I mean, so, yes. So.
Yeah.
But six of one, half dozen of the other. Like,
right. I'm not sure what the usefulness would be. But
yeah, but I mean, Maybe the people who made it also wouldn't think that.
Yeah, I don't even know that.
If that's not what they made it for. But people, and maybe those teachers think it's useful for other reasons. I don't know.
Sure, maybe.
I won't see it. But we are already halfway over time, and I have 2 weeks worth of movies to go through, and I've watched a lot of them.
Yes.
But before then, we have to talk about Dire Wolves.
Okay.
What do you know about Dire Wolves?
They're extinct, and as far as I'm concerned, they're still extinct. they created these pups from, you know, DNA, blah, 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 and the wolf, you know, whatever. There's this animal that now exists that shares significant DNA with dire wolves, which present-day wolves already do. So, it's an extinct species. It's still extinct. I'm not very impressed by the return of the dire wolf or whatever. I have no idea what they're going to look like when they grow up. But
neither do they.
But right, they're going to live that long. That's another thing.
That's the boring version. First off, and this is a huge one for me as like a gamer and a nerd or whatever, dire wolves were a real thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're quite not large. Like wargs. They're not like made up for fantasy stuff. No. Dire wolves were real and went extinct. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think it was our fault, that one. I think they went extinct. This was before our real time, and they just extincted. Like so many animals go extinct all the time. It's sort of part of how evolution works. Whatever. So anyway, this company, I don't remember the name, which is good because I probably didn't give them any more. Well, okay, cool. So he remembers the name. As I was saying, it's probably good we don't, but now it's bad. Williams ruined everything. But anyway, that name he just said, which I didn't even hear, said, we have remade dire wolves. We brought them back. This is our first unextincted species ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then the scientific community, at least the ones that could be bothered, went and looked and said, nah. Did you bring back an extinct species, or did you take an existing species, gray wolves, and via genetic editing just glue a bunch of shit on them? And the company, whose name I don't recall, Shut Up William, came back with, well, okay, we're defining unextincting as we created an animal that has the same ecological features that a dire wolf we're pretty sure had. So we made something that fits that spot in ecology with mostly gray wolf. And then the scientific community was like, we got actual stuff to do and whatever. And a huge swath of people, mostly the force sensitive ones, cried out for no reason. Why did you do this? What is the usefulness? Why? Stop it. I mean, forget that you may be creating the new apex predator that wipes us all out. What is the practical benefit other than look how cool I can gene edit? It's terrible. But two people who were super on board from jump was Joe Manganiello, D&D playing celebrity Joe Manganiello, which I get. He's a D&D guy. He's like, shit, we made direwolves? That's awesome. Like, okay, one reason to try and do this is it'll make Joe Manganiello happy, and I'm okay with that. But another person who just right on the bandwagon instantly was George R.R. I'll finish it when I get to it, Martin.
Yeah, there's a picture of him holding one of them.
What I can tell, the internet as a whole, as a hive mind, not a single person missed the opportunity to comment on his posts of like, you lived long enough to see a species come back from extinction, but not long enough to finish your goddamn book series. And people bitch about, like, don't give George R. R. Martin a hard time. He'll do it when he do it. And it's really ghoulish to be like, well, what if he dies too soon? And that is all true. I do feel like George R. R. Martin got real rich and famous real fast suddenly after years of just barely scraping by as an author. And it went to his head, and now he's just not... Like, I feel like I would do this if I wrote a best-selling series. And it's not cool. I'd just be like, I got the money now. I got the fame. We'll get around to it. So I don't have a ton of sympathy for him, but I do relate. Anyway, so direwolves, don't talk to them or date them. They're just gray wolves, but like bigger and more deadly. Like the parallels between several of the worst Jurassic Park movies are unescapable.
Well, sure, yeah.
This idea that, like, it's not just dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are boring. We're going to make them tougher than they were 65 million years ago. And that's this version. Like, you know what's cooler than a gray wolf? A gray wolf with, I don't know, I haven't looked into the details. I assume there's a buzzsaw coming out their back, or like laser eyes or something. So, yeah, it's terrible. Don't do it. All right. I've seen a lot of things. Seen a lot of things.
I see that. It's a big, long list.
Well, it's been a couple weeks because somebody went on and on last week about hearing tests. Also, let's talk real fast about The Residence.
Oh.
We're now a few episodes into The Residence on Netflix. This is a murder mystery at the White House. It has a bunch of people in it you like, and a surprising number of people that I'm like, I like them and they seem familiar, and I looked them up and they are famous, prolific actors. And by coincidence, I've never seen any of the things they're in, but for some reason they looked really familiar to me. I had it happen like four different times. It's weird, but a bunch of people I know, Giancarlo Esposito, Ken Marino, Randall Park, Bronson Pinchot. And I always love seeing Bronson Pinchot.
Oh yeah.
I don't even remember who, there's a bunch of great people in it. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's a good time.
Yeah, it is.
There's a genre of mystery. It is a murder mystery in the same way that Leverage is a heist show and a Confidence show. Like, technically true, but not really. Like,
and not really the reason you'd watch it.
No, it's one of those where people learn things you couldn't possibly know. A lot of the big reveals just lead to the next episode. Like, that was the thing. We had somebody recently and I was like, oh, this looks bad for them, but I know they're not the murderer because it looks bad for them and it's episode 3.
Right.
So they can't be like, you don't watch it for the mystery.
No.
You watch it for the funny, witty, Sorkin-esque at times, but more comedic Sorkin-esque, snappy dialogue and stuff. And it's fun. It is nutritionally fairly bereft, unless you really want to learn about bird watching, maybe. But
it's, or the fun history of the White House. There's a lot.
Did you like Knives Out? Did you like Glass Onion? It's one of those.
It kind of is, yeah. A little better than those, I think.
Did you like The Detective? I hope not, because that show sucked and it got canceled. But like, it's one of those. Did you like After Party? After Party, same thing. It's one of those. It's a genre that is creating now of, I don't even want to say a cozy mystery, but just like a vibes mystery, where like you watch it and the point isn't the mystery. It's just like, ooh, spooky. Oh, you got caught in something completely unrelated to the murder, but it'll kill runtime and it's fun and we'll have jokes about it. And there'll be twists and surprises that I never could have guessed because they're random. But it's fun. It's fun. I don't want to go either direction. It is not good quality art. It is a fun time, and it is clever in places, and it's got some great performances as well. Its value as a comedy is higher than its value as a mystery. But I like it. I like it. I'm enjoying it. I hope they do more. I will watch more.
I will too. I'll watch more of them. I agree with everything just said.
I wouldn't be like, oh, because I love the mystery.
No.
I mean, I grew up on mysteries. I grew up on mysteries where there's always three suspects. And 10 minutes before the end, our detective sees something that means something to them, not to us, mm-hmm. and blows the whole thing wide open.
Right, right, right.
To the degree that there was an episode of, I believe, Matlock that had the three suspects, and then they filmed three endings and had them call it was a phone poll. So, like, they left it so open-ended that they're like, you guys get to vote on who the murderer is.
Also in this show is a lot of information about the White House and the history of the White House. Some of it awkwardly shoehorned in. Yeah,
supposedly there are levels of accuracy that are unprecedented, no pun intended.
Which that was kind of interesting. Sometimes it was awkward the way they introduced it.
But they're like, oh, so this is the exact layout of what the government tells you the exact layout of the White House is. Okay. Which, why would they? It's bizarre to be like, you know, here's the security layout for your TV show. Like, yeah, I hope they didn't. I hope it's not as accurate as they're claiming. Like, why would you do that?
But I mean, things like President so-and-so did this, and, you know, this person did this. I mean, I think some of those things were correct, and it was interesting. So again, sometimes traditions, awkwardly shoehorned in.
Traditions.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could tell the person who wrote it was really interested in all that and wanted to show off their knowledge of it. But it was also fun.
One of the people that I was like, I feel like I know them, and I looked them up, and they've been in everything but not anything I've seen, so I don't really know them. But for some reason, I feel like I know them. The main character, the detective.
Oh, yeah, she was in Orange is the New Black.
She's in a bunch of stuff that I just haven't seen.
Oh, okay.
And she looks incredible. I would swear to you I've seen her in things. I think she reminds me of some other actor because I looked it up and I'm like, I technically haven't seen her in anything, but she's been in a bunch of stuff and she seems real familiar. I love her. She's great. She's a great time.
Really good. Really
I'm not,
good.
The character, like, I would not hang out with this person. But it's a real fun person to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. She did a great job.
All right. All right. We got to run through so many movies. All right. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 movies. Some of them fall into camps. We watched the two sides of 90s Coen Brothers films. We watched two films that I was like, those were Coen Brothers films? And they were.
Mm.
But it was surprising, depending on your familiarity with the Coen Brothers. We watched The Hudsucker Proxy. And then we watched Barton Fink. Have you seen either of these?
No, I have not.
All right. The Hudsucker Proxy is a movie about a big fancy company, and the boss dies, and fake stock reasons involved. They're going to lose the company, so all the evil executives decide to promote some idiot to the highest, to the new CEO, and then he'll do such a bad job, the stock will plummet, and they can buy it all up, and then they'll be in charge or something. I don't know. Evil plan. We're going to make a nobody into the CEO. And the nobody happens to be Tim Robbins, who just came from Muncie, Indiana, and it's his first day in the mailroom, and now he's CEO. Also, at one point, he invents the hula hoop. And then a basic morality tale happens. Barton Fink is John Turturro, is a playwright in New York, and gets convinced to go to L.A. to work for one of the movie studios for a while to earn money. And then nothing really goes well for him. They're both weird as shit. Like, really confusingly weird.
Oh, okay. Confusingly weird.
To me. not in a, I'm not following the story, but, like, there's so many layers. And it they take Tim Burton around the 90s and take David Lynch during the time he was alive, combine those, and then suck all of the, like, dark parts out of it And that's kind of it. It very much is like the set dressing and the shots and everything are very like, oh, it's Tim Burton's whimsical, cheerful cousin or something. Like it's not the gloomy gothness, but it's the weird, the buildings are strange, like exaggerated, and there's a sort of leaning on certain versions of Americana in a weird way. Bonkers. Hudsucker Proxy in particular is bonkers. There's so many weird. Jennifer Jason Leigh is the female lead, and she does this very clipped mid-Atlantic accent that sounds like she's doing old-timey radio, but like it's set in the 50s, so this is old-timey even for that, and she does it constantly and no one else does it, and it's never explained. It's very weird. Also, Satan and God might be maintenance workers in this building, and at one point they get in a fight. Angels definitely show up. It's a weird movie. Angels show up in this one, and in theory, in Barton Fink, the devil might show up. There are some theories about who certain characters were. But it also has this very Lynchian sort of like, things are intense and things are weird, but you're not really sure what's going. I don't know. It's not remotely what I consider Coen Brothers. Like, I get it. I can see the Coen-ness in it, but it doesn't. This must have been a weird time for them. But Hudsucker Proxy is a very positive, bonkers, weird film. And Barton Fink is more of a tragic, bonkers, weird film, if that matters. Remarkable performances by John Turturro and John Goodman in Barton Fink. John Goodman has a pretty big role in that and does a good job. Perfectly acceptable performances by everybody in Hudsucker Proxy, including Paul Newman in that one. So that's fun. I think they're of equal quality. I enjoyed Barton Fink more. I don't know why. That's what we have to say about that today.
Okay.
All right. So we're getting those out of the way. All right. Let's talk about the dumb ones. We watched Bloodshot.
Don't know that one.
You haven't heard of that?
I don't think
That's interesting because up to three people have heard of this movie. Bloodshot is based off of a comic, and it was a movie made based on this, starring Vin Diesel, and it came out in 2020. In fact, I believe it hit theaters in like early March of 2020.
Oh, pandemic time.
Yeah. And I think its box office suffered immensely because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good, but it's good enough to have gotten sequels if it had been during a different time.
Oh, okay.
Basically, Vin Diesel is a soldier, and he died, and now they Robocopped him, but with nano machines, and... He wants vengeance on his because his family got killed. Some, I don't remember, but people that matter to him that he probably has sex with got killed. And so when he comes back as nano machine Robocop, he's mad and wants vengeance, but that's a bad idea. But
Nanocop,
there might be twists. Everything may not be as it seems. But mostly it's very clearly a Vin Diesel vanity project. So if you're like us and you kind of watch those with a weird morbid curiosity, like the last Witch Hunter, shit like that, like, then yeah, this should be in your repertoire.
It's a Revenant story in a way.
A little bit.
Some Frankenstein stories are too.
Yeah, this is not a very good adaptation of Frankenstein. we also watched Cockneys versus Zombies.
Oh. Hmm.
So, if you like Shaun of the Dead,
yeah,
this is going for that. It's trying to be a Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
It's a little more updated, and it is specifically East End London. The zombie outbreak is happening in the East End and is only affecting the East Londoners, which tend to be the working class Cockney folk, as opposed to Shaun of the Dead, which took place in sort of a edge suburb of London in the Northwest. This is down East. So if you're a fan of East End culture, probably shouldn't watch this. It's pretty broad. But if you like that sort of slant, it's a Shaun of the Dead. It's not as good as Shaun of the Dead. It's entertaining. It's fun. Most of the fun, we've sort of got two stories going, and one is an old Cockney gangster who's now in a nursing home, and the zombie outbreak happens, and he and the old age pensioners have to, like, deal with it. And that's kind of fun. It's a comedy. It's definitely a comedy. That's sort of more fun than the other guys. But it's fun. If you like Shaun of the Dead and you're like, I kind of want a Shaun of the Dead thing, this is good. So you can check it out. It's not bad. It's not as good as Shaun of the Dead. But. All right. And we got Bloodshot out of the way. All right. Let's talk time crimes. Or, as it's called in its original Spanish, Los Cronocrimes, which is way cooler. Time Crimes is a movie from about 2009 that is a low-budget Spanish film, like from Spain, Spanish. And it's about time travel. And it's fine. It's a thriller, a little bit of a comedy. Mostly, it does time travel right, which means it falls into a very small list of time travel films.
Along with Gargoyles.
Topped with Gargoyles. And actually, this is a very similar version to the Gargoyles version. You don't have to have the same version for me. You just have to have a consistency of image or a complete lack of image. Like, you either have to have rules and stick to those rules, or wibbly wobbly timey wimey, a wizard did it.
Yeah.
These options I am fine with. Everything in between, where 99% of time travel stories lives, fuck right off. This is in the 1%. They came up with a method. It happens to be the Gargoyles one, which is to say there is only one timeline. And if you change things, they have always been changed. That kind of thing. You just didn't understand. It's that kind of one. It involves time loops of a sort, but it's all a single timeline. If you like that, I say check it out. It's not. It's good for that. If you want a good time travel, it's a horror. I think it's a horror. It's not super horrific, but it's a horror. Watch it. It's a good one. All right, and now, and not all of this was on purpose, but so Val Kilmer died.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been battling, I believe, throat cancer for a very long time, and he died.
Yeah.
I don't care. I mean, I do. It's always sad when people die. I am not a huge Val Kilmer fan. Fair I am enough. A modest Val Kilmer fan. I think Val Kilmer was a tremendous actor. And unfortunately, he got a little too leading manned, and that can ruin good actors. Tom Cruise has amazing acting capacity, but it never gets used in almost anything. So Val Kilmer had some of that, but I saw some things. I'm like, he's really good. The internet, or at least the corner I hang out with, is super into retrospecting him right now and all the things. So movies are flying at my face that he was in. And there, a lot of them are ones like, I always meant to see that, or I haven't seen that in a while. That's good. I should watch that again. So, the consequence is we've watched some Val Kilmer. And it wasn't necessarily our intent to have a tribute to Val Kilmer at his death now, but I guess that's what's happened.
Okay.
So, I don't want to, I don't, I don't want to overstate my love of Val Kilmer because I don't care that much. And mostly, every time I think of Val Kilmer, I think of when I was stuck in the airport on a long layaway the day they found Amy Winehouse's body, and they were just running that over and over again because they had nothing else that they could do. And they were looking for people they could interview that might have some connection. And they interviewed Val Kilmer because they could get him because he once played a character who was a drug addict in The Doors. He'd never met Amy Winehouse. But they interviewed him on what that's like because 24-hour news cycle, baby. Anyway. We watched The Saint. Which I think maybe I saw before. It's a fun time. It in the original Saint, it's kind of like The Saint, the series of books is vaguely sort of James Bond-esque. This version, they make him sort of a confidence trickster thief, and that's fun because Val Kilmer does a bunch of A-team style costume changes to get in places and stuff, and that's fun. And Val Kilmer's good at doing different wacky characters. That's a fun time. This movie was made in the 90s, which is the decade that has so much to answer for. And as I love watching 90s films that involve DNA, because by the 90s we knew that was a thing, but we did not know shit about how it worked. Right. And so every 90s film that talks about DNA is hilarious.
Like computers, this, too. Computers,
yeah. This movie has that issue with two things. One, human romance. It has a terrible romance subplot that, like, you're like, I don't believe any of this. That should not make you fall in love. No, this is awful. Stop kissing her. You're the worst. You know, 90s movie stuff. But on top of that, the plot-driving MacGuffin is Elizabeth Shue has figured out cold fusion.
Oh.
This movie. And I love this because since this movie has come out, we still haven't got fusion down. But we have made tremendous strides in it via CERN and other like. We have actually created controlled nuclear fusion reactions. They're short. Mm-hmm. We can't power shit with it yet, but we've actually done it and we know how it works. This movie does not remotely. It actually like happens that like, oh, it's so bad with, and that makes it hilarious. So if you can accept that there are two terrible things and that makes it hilarious, then it's not bad. Then we watched The Island of Dr. Moreau. There are only a few reasons. I had never seen it. Trish had seen it a long time ago. There are only a couple of reasons to watch The Island of Dr. Moreau. The reason I watched it is apparently the making of it was so insane. There's a documentary just about the making of it. There's a part where the director, in essentially a petulant temper tantrum, went into the jungle, climbed a tree, and lived in it for like 4 days and wouldn't come down. I believe Val Kilmer showed up to set thinking he was playing the part that Brando was playing. Also, Brando's character has a little dude with him, and that dude is just a friend of Brando's who he brought with him to set and said put him in the movie. Like, it's apparently insane. So I watch this so that I have the context so I can watch that ridiculous making of documentary. The other reason to watch this movie is if you are a big fan of Fairuza Balk and you're like, it's been a minute since The Craft happened. I can't keep playing my VHS of Return to Oz. I need some Fairuza Balk in my life. She's in this movie.
No.
And I was pleased to see her. I don't get enough Fairuza Balk in my life. when you're like, I need a young woman, or sometimes a young child woman, depending on how early it is, who is lovely and wonderful and cute and all that, but just doesn't seem right. Do you have one of those? And we're like, we do. This Her name is Firuza right. Balk. Did you say Veruca Salt? No, I said Firuza Balk. It's a little different and therefore weird.
Doesn't seem right.
Like, I love her, and she's done amazing things. But tell me that's not an accurate description of Firuza Balk. You need a young woman really. In a movie, but you need her to seem wrong somehow? And it's not like that she's got, like, a disfiguring. She looks fine. You're just like, she's cursed or something. Like, she's, at the end, it's going to have been her, right? When we find out. Like, when one of us is inevitably possessed, it's her. It was her the whole time, right? I can tell. No, I'm not nothing against her. She's charming. She's lovely. It's a thing. Firuza Balk has a thing. You know she's possessed. It's a whatever. If you don't believe, but so if you like Firuza Balk, this is a reason to watch it. And a third reason to watch this movie doesn't exist. So, if you want to watch the documentary about how bonkers it was, because the movie is bonkers, but not in a compelling or interesting way.
Mm.
It's just like, it's more like it's clear people weren't getting along, or Brando was Brandoing it. So, like, at no point, half the time he's reading off of a script that is, like, taped to somebody's chest. Like he did in The Godfather, and the other half he's just making up lines, full clock. All of it. He has like an ice bucket on his head at one point. I'm pretty sure that was his idea. It's not good, but it's not even good fun. So those are your only reasons to watch it. And then, because Honest Trailers got in on this, and did an Honest Trailer for Tombstone, and I was like, oh. Because Tombstone's a fucking fun movie. Tombstone has a lot of great lines. Tombstone, as the Honest Trailer said, Tombstone is one of those movies that is mostly just made up of the good parts of movies. And I was when Tombstone came out, and then Wyatt Earp, which was Kevin Costner's version, mm-hmm. I went to the theaters to see both of them. I enjoyed both of them. Tombstone's better. So we watched Tombstone. You've seen Tombstone, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tombstone kicks ass. It has amazing lines. It has some great set pieces, really cool action. Maybe the best Val Kilmer performance. Everything I want to say. Everybody else is basically just being 19th century toxic masculinity, and they're good at it. It's Kurt Russell, it's Sam Elliott, and then little brother Bill Paxton, which is what he did at this time. He played annoying little brothers and or the goofy cops. He was the asshole in every genre thing in the 80s and 90s, which is weird because that's not how his end career was, but that's how he was in especially in second ones. Terminator 2, Aliens, he shows up and is an asshole and dies. That's book of, but in this he's the little brother who's kind of an asshole and dies. Anyway, phenomenal movie. Nonsense. Like every Wyatt Earp is a shitty dude. Wyatt Earp is arguably the worst of the non-explicit bad guys in this film. For a variety of reasons. Nothing is his idea. All the good shit that happens is after he already like fucked it up by not doing it earlier, or because somebody's been goddamn murdered. And so he's like, I guess I gotta shoot him. His whole plan is to basically become a robber baron. Like, he has a wife with a drug problem and he ditches her for a romance based on three encounters. where they have nothing in common. The three encounters are just like they really aren't similar. So like they must really be horny for each other to like start a life based on that. So the story is terrible. All the interpersonal stuff is garbage. If you set that aside and just the fucking action and the one-liners, it's gold. But what's really funny, and I just realized I already know what the title of this episode is, and it was ordained well before now. So Trish afterwards is like, who is, like, what's Wyatt Earp's deal for real? Because I'm like, I don't think he's not the guy everybody thinks he is. Somebody wrote a book about him, and he became this larger-than-life thing. And he was a person, but I don't think he was that. So she looks him up. Holy shit, Wyatt Earp was not a good dude. Wyatt Earp did not do a lot of law enforcement.
No.
Very little. He was present for some shit, but you know what he mostly did? Married prostitutes and pimped.
Yes, that's correct.
Except there's a lot of confusion in places about whether or not he was married to certain prostitutes mm-hmm. while running a brothel, and mm-hmm. certain confusion about whether or not he was a pimp in places or just a bodyguard. And as Trish and I said, in a brothel, that's a weird distinction. That's a blurry line there. But the point is, he frequently hooked up with women who then he helped run brothels. He was arrested for pimping many times in many different states, and just a bad dude overall. Weird specific things from the movie actually happened, and like he really did end up with this random woman after the wife died. Oh, by the way, the wife before who has the drug problem, he married her when she was 18 and currently an active working prostitute. And was with her for 3 years, and then she died when he was gone, and he hooked up with this other woman for basically 47 years, although it was kind of an off and on thing. He would go do shit and then come back to where she was staying. They had like a little bungalow by the sea in the winters, but technically it was a 40-some year relationship, so I guess that's that. Anyway, it's insane, but the best part about it is this, and I'm getting to the title of the episode. He was born in Macomb, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and he spent a lot of his early adulthood in Peoria,
mm-hmm.
where he got arrested for pimping. And there was a newspaper article in which he and someone else of note locally were arrested, and I forget the other person's name, but the headline just referred to Earp as the Peoria Bummer. Which, there are multiple definitions of the word bummer, some of which are culturally different, but there's a few different ways you could take that. All of them are hilarious. So I will never refer to Wyatt Earp as Wyatt Earp again for the rest of my life. I will refer to him as the Peoria Bummer.
But also, his family moved to Pella, Iowa, which is in the same county that I
yes.
grew up in.
And they didn't mean to, but one of the kids got sick, so they were like, shit, we live here now.
So,
which happened a lot when you were going west, by the way.
Yeah, like, so
somebody right. stubbed their toe. Welcome to our new home. Like,
so
that
in Marion,
a lot.
In Marion, and he that's where he grew up, in Pella. I mean, he went back to Peoria and all that stuff. But
and learned to bum.
But he's, you know, Marion County, where I'm from. He's well known there because he moved there when he was an infant, that they just think that's where Wyatt Earp is from, right? That's where he grew up. That's where he spent his childhood. And the younger brother who dies in Tombstone was born in Pella.
Morgan. Although Tombstone has two brothers. He had 9 siblings, I believe.
Yeah, right. But
including ones who were in the parts of the movie, like they should have been there in the movie, but they aren't.
Well,
but yeah, the movie, we have his older brother, Virgil, who of the Earps is the one who did a shit ton of law enforcement. And in fact, spoiler alerts for Tombstone, his arm done. and he has to leave with the women folk. He went on to be the sheriff of a different town with one arm years later and stuff. Like he did. Yeah,
he was arguably the one that it was because of him that any other Earps ever had anything to do with law enforcement.
Yeah.
Because Wyatt's plan was always, you know, make it rich with a silver mine or, you know, and then while that wasn't happening, possibly. Like you said, yeah, he bought saloons and engaged in, having prostitutes in those saloons and sometimes not in saloons. He was just, like you said, a pimp. So yeah, that was his whole deal. He only ever got involved with law enforcement mostly because of Virgil, as far as I know.
And the movie actually makes a reference at one point, some drunk bandit is calling them pimps. And it doesn't make sense. Unless you know the context.
Like, I do not
believe they pimp in this movie.
I guess I don't remember that. But in the
Cowboys, it's hard to say because they do sort of get involved in a casino, and in theory, the casino has escorts. So
sure.
By association,
but,
I guess.
But not everybody felt like the Cowboys were, you know, bad guys. I mean, some people felt. I mean, it's like any kind of.
They definitely are in this movie, but
no, you're right. But
it's interesting. The criminals vary, and some of them switch sides for reasons and things. And actually, what I consider the primary inciting incident of all the crazy shit that happened was very much played up as an accident. And even though it was one of the main villains, like, he didn't do it on purpose. He was drunk and did something stupid. And because, like, at the moment it happens, he's like, I'm sorry, it was an accident. And then they're like, I got to arrest you. And then things go to hell. And Kurt Russell looks at the camera and goes, pimping ain't easy.
Wyatt. Because of his he was a Pella boy, I know a little bit about him. And it's not very.
It also explains the 10-minute window glazing scene right in the middle of Tombstone.
Good one. That's a good
That's
one.
Never made sense. For those of you not from the other, Pella makes windows. That's kind of their
Pella windows.
Their deal is baked goods in the shape of letters, tulips, and windows. So what we call the Dutch trifecta.
And some earth moving equipment called Vermeer. You've never heard of them.
And the home of the Peoria Bummer.
He was that later. He grew up in Iowa first.
Oh, he was always that. We saw in his heart, they're like, that boy's... They say that kid's going to grow up to be a heartbreaker? They were like, that kid's going to grow
didn't
up...
Didn't he leave a wife back there, though, too? Didn't he get married to
someone? Oh, he had a ton of wives.
Yeah.
Had a lot of wives. All or most sex workers. All or most then helped him run a brothel, or they were already running one, and he married them and helped them.
But you're just correct. He just would have been a forgotten historical footnote unless someone out east wrote some Western romance about
him. And they did sort of at the end of his life. Mm-hmm. And he was super into it. He lived surprisingly old age.
Mm-hmm.
And he really liked it. But
To Tombstone's credit, they didn't really portray him as a very heroic character, I didn't think.
They really did. It's a little bit shocking because they also clearly think it's a romance, and I don't.
Yeah.
And I remember not liking the druggy wife in the first one, and now I have, the first time I saw this, now I have just utter sympathy for her.
Correct, yeah. But Val Kilmer.
It's still a rip-roaring time. Like, if you go into it for the right reasons, Tombstone is still a fucking blast.
And Val Kilmer is one of the main reasons to watch
it. So many great lines.
Yeah.
And Val Kilmer gets so... I mean, we all remember I'm Your Huckleberry, but he's got all the great ones of
so good.
Frederick fucking Chopin, and I do not think I could bear it if you... We weren't friends anymore, and you have always been a good woman. Then again, you may be the Antichrist.
There's no way Doc Holliday was one-tenth as cool as Val Kilmer's Doc Holliday. Nobody, there's no way.
I always think of the trick shooting with the cup.
Yeah, that's good.
Scene, and it always makes me think of Chronicles of Riddick and the teacup. I'm gonna kill you with my teacup scene, which are vastly different, but they just make me think of each other. But it's the same sort of like,
yeah.
No, it's rip roaring fun. go see Tombstone. Just know beforehand its limitations. There's only so much the Peoria Bummer can do. We are well over time, and unfortunately, the side quest deck is over there. So the chair's gonna move. Watch out! Stop looking at my butt.
Oh, you forgot
your eyes on my butt. Stop looking at my butt.
Forgot your side quest.
Usually pretty good. We got it.
Got it. All right.
All right. Pick a number between 4 and negative 12.
0.
There's been a lot of debate over whether 0 counts as a number, but I'm going to let it slide this time. Watch out for the bar!
Okay.
Launch checklist. Wait, that's not what that means.
There's a rocket on the card. That's cool.
They all have that.
Yeah, I know. But I think it's cool. Yeah.
It reminds me of the Space Team game or Maximum Fun Podcasting Network. Launch checklist. Do a brain... Oh, crap. All right, I'm just going to have to talk you through this, including the punctuation, because it's not in a way that sound like words make sense.
Okay.
So here's what we have. Launch checklist, colon, do a brain dump, colon, mind map, comma, make a list, comma, or journal your thoughts. Feels like you've got about 6 options there. Some of which I'm not sure our technology has successfully achieved.
Okay. Launch a checklist.
Yeah, so either launch a checklist, dump a brain, map a mind, make a list, or journal a thoughts.
The last two seem pretty simple, but the other ones, you're right. Those are going to take some.
I could launch a checklist.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, in the low Earth orbit, at least. I would have to give some serious consideration to the materials the list was made out of. Also, I do not want to go into details, but I can dump a brain.
Yeah. Okay.
I know places. I know where. No one will find it.
And we circle back to Frankenstein somehow.
Ah, Victoria Funkenstein. All right. Oh, this is an Ursula Le Guin quote.
So that sounds like a blaxploitation movie. Why do you keep saying that?
Because there is a movie, there is one, I believe, called Dr. Funkenstein.
Oh, okay.
What was it? It was earlier in this episode. I was making a joke about being a ripoff of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And so instead of Victor Frankenstein, it was Victoria Funkenstein.
Yeah.
His cousin. All right. This is an Ursula Le Guin quote, so we all got to show some respect here.
Okay.
It is good to have an end to journey toward, but it is the journey that matters in the end. I love Ursula Le Guin. That is some the most live, laugh, love bullshit.
A she bummer, if you will.
Amazing things. That was, yeah, take that back to Peoria. Take that shit back to Peoria. Ursula, like, famed author that changed the landscape of genre fiction and is quite dead. Go back to Peoria with that bullshit. Ha! Got her! Slam! So we're going to end this episode. Slam on Ursula Le Guin. Take that. If you'd like to stop us from doing this, please email us themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. Stu, you've been sitting on deck for a while with the email. I know, it's been too many things. That's all I got. But do keep emailing and go to the blog at magicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us your personal experiences with the Peoria Bummer. Maybe you were pimped by him at an early age, or maybe you and he learned to make windows over one crazy summer together as children. Tell us your thoughts on that. And Kevin Costner. And in the meantime, dump a list, check a brain, make a journey, journal a brain, stop launching. Bummer.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.